It's Mark Yeagy here, wealth architect and lifestyle investor. Let's take your life to the next level. Welcome to the Wealth Architect Podcast. Hey, everybody, it's Mark Yeagy. Welcome back to another edition of the Wealth Architect Podcast. So glad you're here today. We've got a guy with the same first name as me. Not that means anything, but we got a pretty cool dude going to be talking a little bit about crypto. And there's lots of news going on these days about crypto. And there will always be lots of news going on in crypto because it's a widely, fastly, quickly growing, exciting space to be in. And there's always lots of changes and there will always be lots of changes. It's here to stay. And you might as well learn about it. And from an investment side, it's also a good thing. Our guest today is the director for Hawk Finance. He's an early crypto evangelist, which is cool. His decade of experience and ideas establish him as a thought leader in creating and building crypto brands. So let's welcome to the show, Mark Bassa. Mark, welcome.
Pleasure. Thanks so much, Mark.
So great to have you. Now, Mark, you are in Copenhagen in Denmark today, right?
That's right.
But you're an Australian, so you've got like all the continents covered, at least three of them anyway.
Yeah, basically. And as we were saying before, yeah, I've come from a beautiful beachy warm climate to chilly Copenhagen, but for good reason.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, that's exciting because that's going to give you a great perspective to be able to tell our listeners and viewers what crypto is all about and why we should even be listening to them about it. So let me start with that question. Why should we care about crypto?
I think that you should care about crypto because it's going to be the underlying technology that's going to fuel the new internet. So everything that we do today from web browsing, e-commerce, banking, everything that we do right now in centralized systems is what are we going to do with blockchain technology. I think it's important that we think about crypto emerging and becoming a part of our lives, just like the internet did. So if you were to explain the internet back in the early 90s to a lot of people, you know, really couldn't just see themselves adopting it, just like many of the world's biggest companies couldn't. It had to just come to fruition on its own, sure, through all different forms. So that's why I think it's very important to pay attention to.
I think I agree with you. I think we're really early on the S curve of adoption, very, very early. But I listen to you and I say, you know, if I were a listener or a viewer, I would be wondering, well, why do we need to replace the existing internet? It's pretty darn good. It's not that old either. You know, it's, you know, 30, 40 years old and, you know, really coming to its own just in the last 20 years. Why do I need to replace it already? It seems fine to me.
Yeah, good point. Look, it also comes down to why would you want to replace, centralized systems or banking or any sort of centralized authority? And I think that if you consider privacy and democracy and things where people can actually own their data or own their own money, that's why you should consider this interesting. And I've said this on many podcasts and interviews before. It's kind of like my own line to say that if you and I, you know, transact right now from $1 to another dollar from my bank to your bank, that is a centralized system. You and I don't actually own that bank. We're lending that dollar, so to speak. Those are figures. And I mean, if we try to do a bank run at the local bank, see what happens. Very similar to what's happening to these centralized exchanges. There's no difference. If you consider what cryptocurrency can do and blockchain technology, it becomes our money. So if you're going to buy Ether on the Ethereum blockchain and you put your US dollars into that blockchain, you know, that becomes ours. The central, you could say the authority there that's managing that money is a network. It's set up, it's powered by nodes, by people all around the world. And that's not how centralized authorities work. And that means if you consider global politics, where's the world going to head in by 2030, 2040, 50, if it goes the wrong way, the bad way, the more centralized these systems become, the more political they become, which means that soon you may not be able to buy a loaf of bread because you have the wrong thoughts. And that's scary to a lot of people, which is where blockchain sort of comes into play and says, this is the solution. It's not perfect in many ways, but it is better than the wrong government or the wrong people taking control.
You know, a lot of people can't see, and what we're talking about is centralized, the central bank digital currency, CBDCs.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't see that there's an insidious force potentially behind that. And, I always talk about asymmetric risk on this podcast, right? So Bitcoin, yeah, in my opinion, has an asymmetric risk. It could go from 17,000, roughly where it is today, to zero. That's a possibility. It could go from 17,000 to $1 million a token. To me, that's an asymmetric risk. I'm risking 17,000 to maybe get a million if you think my math is correct. And asymmetric risk is what we do all the time as investors, right? We're constantly, you know, placing our bets, putting our money behind what we think are good investments. And good investments have to do with risk, right? No risk, no return usually.
Yeah.
High risk, usually, hopefully high return. So there's a lot of asymmetric risk in having a CBDC. First of all, the first layer is all they're going to do is take the printed money, which we don't even use much of it anymore, and they're going to centralize it and create this other money in a blockchain. That sounds pretty good on its surface, doesn't it?
On its surface, I think the principles sound good of having these currencies, but I think at the underlayer kind of concern has to be is that who are central banks? What is their history? And what sides of the war have they betted on? If the bank owns both sides of the coin and they've funded both sides of a war or the wars or anything in that matter, do you trust that entity? Do you know who the parties are that are loaning your money for, you know, extraordinary returns and giving you pittance? I mean, here in Scandinavia, you've got to pay the banks to keep your money the bank and they charge you. Back in Australia, for example, you can get some pretty good interest rates for keeping your bank in the money. Keeping your money in the bank, sorry. So it's kind of, you know, these things in principle sound good, but when you dive deeper to these white papers that they released, that there are concerning clauses, or I should say just paragraphs in some of these things, which is about how they can turn off your money. So just consider that there are nations right now where money can be switched off, where you can't go through certain checkpoints or move if you don't believe in the right things, if you're not kind of following the thaw line, the party line. That's scary to think that they will come to the Western world, because I mean, for us, you know, we are built on so many freedoms. That's kind of the fundamental principle of what we have. So if you say that now the banks will control all the money globally via one currency or backed by anything, sure, the transactions are quicker. We won't have to wait a few days to send money from here to the US, for example. But at what cost? So if now they're going to implement a new law and a new way of doing things and you say, I don't like that idea, well, they say, well, you better do it because it's our money now and you won't be able to buy food for your kids. That might sound a little 1984. But I don't see why these things can't happen. I would be more skeptical on the possibilities of things going wrong than a white paper that things are going to be just fine.
Well, that's interesting because I don't think the government ever does anything that can do anything wrong to us. They're always looking out for our best interest. And even over the last couple of years, like I can't even see what the government would say, hey, listen, you can't go buy food if you didn't have a vaccine. They would never do that, for example.
Sure. You know, I mean, like this is kind of the fringe subject. It's just a matter of what they can regard as health and safety, and it's probably going to come down to what threats that can be created, external, internal, and what they can do. At the end of the day, if the government or if centralized banks are owning your currency and the way that you conduct commerce and act freely, because you don't agree with the party line, and that is a concern. Whether you're on the left or the right or anything, it should be a concern to everybody.
Sure.
That freedom of money is more important than anything else.
So I know we have some pilot programs, at least in the United States, going on right now. And I think around the world, there are some CBDC pilot programs already. I know in China, they have one that they've had for a while. How has it gotten this far already? And most people, first of all, don't even understand it. Second of all, don't even see that there's a risk. How has it already started to get tried out, Mark?
I mean, you know, a lot of these things can get trialed out with the current infrastructure that we have. So very early on when people started using the internet, I mean, things just started happening. You could buy things online, you could do things. Things started to get replaced. You ended up doing online banking and then your local bank just kind of diminished and now you don't really go there for anything.
Right.
I think this is the same way. I think that the underlying infrastructure that already exists with online banking, that's how these CBDCs will go global. Using this. So, okay, everyone, you know, the current US dollars you have in this bank, well, now it's a CBDC. Now it's just, we're going to take this money and we're going to put it on the blockchain and here's how it's going to work. How has no one been alerted or how is no one worried? You know, you take the average person working 9 to 5, family life, things get busy. When do you have time to really, you know, think deeply about politics? It's really, really difficult. If you knew the kind of crazy stuff that went on in the world, you know, it's kind of better to be ignorant on all this stuff, because then you've got that My wife and I were talking about this late last night, literally, like, just knowing how bad things possibly are, it is concerning. But then you've got to worry about your children and life and work balance and all these things. So then to say, by the way, everybody, in 10, 20 years, the banks are going to, own everything, and you're not going to escape. That's just another thing on the plate. It's like, well, that sounds bad, but I have to go to work tomorrow. So I just guess it comes under the guise of not really knowing, paying attention. But there's also no red flags now. Not enough articles, or there's not enough education on crypto, let alone CBDCs or any of these things. So the average investor, retail investor, worker is really not going to be that concerned until a red flag happens where that person can't, buy a loaf of bread or access something.
I mean, that's so interesting, and I'm glad we're here educating people about it, because if they've never heard about this concept of a CBDC, a central bank digital currency, you really should learn about it. Just take an hour and figure it out. Listen to podcasts like this, experts like Mark, and understand that there's some risks in there, and then you get to decide whether it's a good idea or a bad idea for you. But most people just don't know about it, like you say. And then pretty soon, one day, it's going to be too late. They're going to be rolling it out nationwide or worldwide, and then you won't have much of a say in it, because it'll be already implemented by people that we supposedly have voted for. So, okay, we've bashed some sides of the cryptocurrency. Now, I know there's some real benefits to cryptocurrency, because I'm a Bitcoin guy. I run a hedge fund with primarily Bitcoin in it, and I'm looking way down the road for me. And it does all those things we've talked about. It gives you freedom. It gives you control of your money, sovereignty, not having to deal with some kind of centralized authority to hold your bank. Let's talk about centralized authority and why that's bad. I mean, I know we just had a problem in the cryptocurrency space with the FTX bankruptcy. So tell us a little bit about that in the shadow of what centralization means.
Well, I think it comes down to, like with Sam and FTX and everything that's gone on recently, or Do Kwon or anybody else. It's kind of like it's never in these cases, it wasn't cryptocurrency's fault. So in terms of why centralized authorities are no good and what we have to look at when building these crypto brands, it really fundamentally comes down to who is building on something that is supposed to be decentral. So you take this Sam guy from FTX and the collapse, and you take Do Kwon and all the other people in the last year that have had huge collapses. What has happened? A couple of people got really, really rich. And a lot of people lost their money. And it's like a, excuse me, a traditional finance scam that you would have seen from, the stock and bond market over the last 20 years. And at the end of the day, really, who is building this, and what is the agenda? How are these people conducting business? How transparent is it? They might use blockchain, but do you really know all their wallets? They're in the back pockets of politicians, and they have the right circles. They've got celebrity endorsements. No red flags are ever going to come up until you dig a little further. So you have to play more, I guess you have to look at it more, scrutinize who is building on this, and is it truly decentral? If somebody has the access codes, the security keys, and it's not acting that way, if someone is operating these cryptocurrencies, decentralized protocols, in a way in which they would operate a centralized hedge fund where a couple of people can just, like, dump, well, that's not what crypto stands for. Decentralization stands for that we can all play a part in this. So I think it's, moving forward, if you take Sam or any of the other people, FTX, anyone else that's been involved in these things, look at how centralized something that is supposed to be decentralized is supposed to be. It's really going to be about, can I put my money in? Is my money safe? What backing? What liquidity? You've got to ask all these questions. What is the brand doing to further the empowerment of the individual to own their own money? Where are they spending on marketing? How are they positioning themselves in the market? Is this just something else where they can say, we've got X amount of liquidity or assets, and then given a crazy amount of interest rates that doesn't even exist? Because a lot of these things, when a bank run happens, a regular bank run, they don't have the assets to back it. And that's why they fall so fast. They fall overnight and people lose everything. I know some people that have lost, quite a staggering amount of money. It's actually quite sad, because they were asleep one night and they woke up to some texts or some tweets. Sorry, everybody, it's over. Sad.
The funny thing is, I used FTX to transact my business. I just didn't leave my coins on the exchange, because there's a saying that I actually listen to, not your keys, not your coins.
Exactly.
So when you pull your coins off and you take it away from the centralization, you actually take control of your own destiny, right? Which is something that a lot of people aren't used to. We're used to, if we have a problem, we call up some centralized figure, the credit card company, the bank, you know, whatever, and we get our money back or we make a complaint. In Bitcoin, in crypto, there's none of that. So I want to summarize, and then I want to ask you a question based on what you said, Mark. So first of all, you started at the top by saying we're going to replace the existing internet with blockchain. And you answered that and said, you know, there's a lot of benefits to decentralizations just from the internet perspective, let alone for the money perspective, which is what we're talking about. And then secondly, you delved into the concept that it's not crypto's fault, right? That these things are happening. These people are getting defrauded. There's people involved. And so as long as there's people with their hands in it, my dad always used to say, if you have somebody sitting next to a pile of money, they're going to want to spend it, right? So if you have people with their hands in the money, that's where the problems are. Now, it takes me back to my questions when I first got into crypto, which wasn't that long ago, but I always thought, well, the reason it just seems risky, it can get hacked, right? Mm. And I can tell you, at least in Bitcoin's case, Bitcoin's never been hacked. It's all the people touches that get hacked. It's the exchanges around it, the Mt. Gox exchanges, the FTX. And then let's talk now, segue into the other cryptocurrencies, because I know you're a leader in creating cryptocurrency projects. But one question to lead into that is, isn't everything but Bitcoin still centralized? Like, isn't Ethereum still a centralized deal? Aren't there ways for the majority to change the rules and benefit themselves if it's a small enough majority that has a big enough ownership percentage? What do you think?
Yeah, you're absolutely right that a lot of these, I mean, I'm sure if you looked at the top 100 projects, a lot of them would be pre-centralized. So I would say that, you know, it's really hard for them to disclose how serious they take security.
Yeah.
A big part of a lot of these blockchains, for example, excuse me, is really about, you know, how many nodes are actually set up? How many people support the network with a node? If there are thousands and thousands of people, it makes it hard for an attack to happen. Sure. How are these blockchains built? What kind of audits do they go through? Are they, you know, more about top-notch security? Like what purpose do they serve and how are they trying to do it? So I don't think anything is 100% secure. I'm not saying that we're going to see hacks in Bitcoin or Ethereum or anything like that. But I'm just saying that, you know, it's a really crazy world and hackers get better day by day.
Yeah.
If you take hackers around the world, say, for example, from North Korea, that's all they do, you know, and I mean, they've stolen billions and billions of dollars. I mean, these blockchains or these protocols or these projects that even sit on top of, say, layer one blockchains.
Yeah.
They're also very, very risky as well. I mean, if you really want to go hard out into crypto and put everything behind it, I mean, the safest bet really is Bitcoin. However, even Bitcoin, while it's not centralized, can still be manipulated. I believe it's the Chinese government and the US government that owns, I think, more Bitcoin than anybody else. I think China's the number one wallet holder, I believe. And I think it sets up on a lot of nodes and things like that. So that means that if China were to ban Bitcoin, as they have how many times in the last 30 times. Years,
yeah,
right? The price can tank, the retail investors just dump, and then they can buy up again. So I'm saying that even though it's decentralized, it can still be manipulated if you believe in the manipulation, if you believe in the tactics. So if you really believe that China was going to ban Bitcoin, then you're saying that what you believe in is that really Bitcoin cannot become adopted unless China adopts it. But if you adopt it and your friend send Bitcoin, the old saying is one Bitcoin is worth one Bitcoin still.
Right.
However, if I put in $1,000 and the price dumps and I've got $10 left, my Bitcoin might be worth one, but I'm down on my US dollar. So how much do you care about that? So that's also one of my other problems with the reliance on stable coins is kind of, if the US dollar does crash, if inflation goes crazy, if too much money is in blockchain, we're going to see all sorts of problems coming to stable coins and fiat currency as a whole.
Yeah, it seems like it's coming anyway, whether we like it or not, with 10 minimum failures that I could probably name off the top of my head. and, you know, the 20,000 tokens out there that some of them don't even have good utility use cases for. Some are good. So let's talk about that. That's your bag, right? That's what you do. You help people create projects. Tell us a little bit more about how that works.
For sure, sure. So, you know, one of the recent projects I got involved in was called Murasaki. It was a couple of Japanese guys, and they were, you know, OGs in the gaming world. Some pretty big exits to the world's largest Japanese IP holders of game IP. And they asked me to join, and I helped them build their brand. And that brand now is backed by Japan's largest VC. So we're basically building, we have a Japanese gaming studio building comic books and everything on the blockchain, which is known as manga, and the whole culture there, and our first title. And now I'm a part of X Weekend, which is a global PR and communications agency. I'm their managing director for the crypto division. So I advise crypto companies on how to build that foundation. And I see what's happened since, you know, Bitcoin 2010, 2011. Everybody wants to get into crypto and blockchain almost for all the wrong reasons, mostly to make money. And that, you know, that lack of authenticity is what drives them down, is what pushes the price down. I have spoken to and worked with companies that have raised tens of millions to hundreds of millions of dollars that are dumping in price every single day because they do not focus on the community. And if you're new to crypto, the community is everything. It's the heart of blockchain. Community is starting a Telegram channel or a Twitter and engaging with your early evangelists and building up a profile so that they become your army. Meme tokens do it better than anyone. Sure. People can say what they want about meme tokens, but they do it better than anyone. They facilitate the community and they love it. And I've seen all this, and I've seen projects go crazy and dumb like mad. But the most important thing is that a project builds, and it builds with a community. But I mean, my takeaway from working with so many of these crypto projects is, if you don't focus on the community, it doesn't matter how much money you have or where your team's from. Nobody's going to hold your token if there's no utility and if there's no visionary or leadership. It all comes down to creating a crypto god out of your own profile, that you are here for the people, decentralization, and this is what your cryptocurrency is going to do.
Hey there, it's Mark Yeagy. I hope you're enjoying the show. Say, if you're interested in becoming involved in crypto technology, especially Bitcoin, but don't know how to go about it, I have some resources for you to go over on my website, wealtharchitectpodcast.com. And if you're a high net worth investor, I have something built especially for you and my other accredited investors. It's a fund specifically dedicated to the exciting future of Bitcoin and crypto. It's called the IntelliGrowth Digital Fund. Hey, listen, I know that if you haven't dedicated a few hundred hours to learning what's going on in Bitcoin space, it can be overwhelming. And that's why me and my team have spent thousands of hours determining the best way to invest, whether it's payment networks, storage, Bitcoin as a currency or a store of value, or even just how this technology is changing the world. I firmly believe that Bitcoin and crypto technology is here to stay. So you might as well have some exposure to it before it really takes off. I always tell my investors that we are all going to need to understand Bitcoin. The only question is whether you do it now, while it's also a great investment, or later when billions of people are using it every day, kind of like the internet. Anyway, if you want to find out how to be an investor, drop me a line here, mark@wealtharchitectpodcast.com, and we could see if it's right for your portfolio. Now, back to the show.
It's so interesting because, you know, I always look at it from the investment side. But there are other aspects of blockchain and cryptocurrency technology or crypto technology that are not monetary, right? And so it seems to me like we focus, like for me, I'm going to focus on Bitcoin because that's the investment side of it. But what are some of the benefits of some of the, you mentioned comic books and things like that. What are some of the other projects out there that are interesting that kind of take our focus away from the money and say, okay, it doesn't matter what the Fed does. It doesn't matter what Bitcoin does with price. What's the point of having a cryptocurrency? Like, why is there a benefit to that that medium?
So it's like this. So if you're interested in being a first mover and collecting art on the blockchain, this is your whole NFT marketplace, right? I mean, first it started out with like these CryptoPunks and Bored Ape Yacht Club, and these things are worth crazy amounts of money now, you know? And I think it's about being a first mover in owning what is cool at the current time and how these trends exist, you know, into the future. You might be involved in a cryptocurrency that is nothing more than owning currency to as a part of a DAO, right? A decentralized autonomous organization where you buy tokens to vote on something. Those tokens that you buy go into a massive liquidity pool, and then it does some good in the world. Maybe it's charity for, you know, poor children or whatever it might be. And you can vote with the community on how the money should be used. Hmm. So there's all sorts of different ways that don't have to be strictly monetarily, you know, immediate in their value. They can be very long-term. So with Japanese gaming, you know, a lot of the Japanese culture or the IP holders, they're not massive on blockchain right now because of Japan's regulation in terms of blockchain and crypto. And the way they do taxing and everything right now is so up in the air. So what we've done, we have this investment vehicle, Murasaki, which is like, okay, we've got a couple of Europeans and mostly Japanese team, one of the best game developers in Asia. And now we're going to bridge and build the best IP on blockchain. That's a first mover. But we're also going to make comic book series. We're going to make games and even characters that you can buy as an NFT that you can use in the game. Something cool. And it's totally community focused. And we actually launched our collection of NFTs recently. And we totally sold out in a bear market. It wasn't a huge collection, but they sold out. The last pack sold out in 20 seconds. Okay. So our community of a few thousand people, you know, this focus was just like, hey, this is some cool art, some of the best devs in Asia. We're going to build a cool game, be a part of the community. Sold out. So the monetary value there wasn't, you know, it wasn't like we're trying to build this like so many other projects. We want to build something to make lots of money. Build something for utility that's fun, that's authentic, that's cool. Right now, you know, at X Weekend, we're talking to some really cool celebrities about NFT collections, some complete, you know, crazy famous celebrities about how we can build something to kind of bring back their legacy as some of the most famous, you know, 1970s, 1980s, 80s actors of all time. What can we do? What special access can you have? Imagine you buy an NFT and then you get to just go have dinner with that person, like that sort of NFT utility. So it's not all monetarily based.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing is I'm really glad we went down that road because so many people think, oh, you know, the Bored Ape Yacht Club, you know, NFTs have all crashed. Or if you look at it on a monetary basis, you're right. There are some, you know, tremendous risks. But if you look at it as some utility, right, like you just mentioned, 80s and 90s movie stars, you know, becoming famous, having dinner with them, those kinds of things, you know, imagine all of the tickets from Ticketmaster or Live Nation or whatever going to an NFT, which gives you some benefits. If you own that, you have a right to do something. Maybe it's a backstage pass. And it doesn't have to be, again, centralized according to Ticketmaster or whoever it is. So, I mean, I think it's fascinating. And I find it to be such a blue ocean, right? There's so much of the world that can move into cryptocurrency. It's certainly not for everything, right? But the crypto and the blockchain technology has a lot of advantages. And I just think everybody just needs to kind of keep their ear to the ground, listen a little bit more, you know what the risks are, know that the benefits are there, and watch as this whole new internet starts to evolve. So, God, I appreciate the wisdom, but what kind of final thoughts can you share with us? You want to talk a little bit about, you know, the millennials and the younger generation and how the younger generation is embracing this way more than people like me who are a little bit older, although I kind of think I'm, you know, I still think I'm 37, but you know,
you're still cool. You're still cool. Yeah. Thanks. Look, I would say there's like two ends of the spectrum here. You're a high net worth individual, you know, you've got, you know, all the money in the world to invest in everything. And you're really looking at the media's perception of crypto, that it's dead, that it's nothing's happening. This kind of perception and that kind of culture within the media is almost representative of what a central bank would like to tell you about crypto. Don't buy it. It's bad. Because every dollar taken from the US bank and put into crypto is one less dollar for them, which means that inflation, it will come and a global collapse will happen. Explore crypto in a way where you want to look at it and say, you know, like what will you do right now? We are strategically helping clients to be their kind of like their soundboard, whether you're a celebrity or you're a, you know, Fortune 500, and they get offered all these crypto projects all the time. We can actually advise you and tell you what you should look at before you invest in it. And this is really, really helpful and a strategy that we actually provide to say, if you're going to go down the road and partner with a blockchain or a protocol or whatever, have you answered these questions? Because I can just take one look and in 10 minutes tell you that it's possibly a scam or a rug pull. I can tell you if the community is engaged. I can tell you if the evangelists in the community are the army or are they now your enemy? And you would never know where to look for these things.
Sure.
But you're an ultra high net worth individual who's got lots of money to spend and all the right signs are there, but look a little deeper. Yeah. Then there's the thing that I would do for the millennials. they're going to adopt this no matter what happens. But the biggest way that they're going to adopt this is that crypto, blockchain as a whole, is replacing centralized banking and all centralized authority. My son is nearly 3 years old. He'll be three next year. The first wallet and the first currency he'll ever have is probably going to be crypto. Huh. He's probably going to have a meme token for fun, and he's going to go to the movies with his friends or buy popcorn or something. That's probably his first experience with money and commerce online. So if you look at that today and you say, well, I want to invest in the next thing that's going to be worth billions of dollars. Look at how projects are out there building things where they're making retail investors and the experts in crypto's life so much easier, especially with bridging currencies. Like you mentioned before, there's thousands of them. It's difficult. It can be expensive. It's hard to understand how a bridge works. If you find a protocol out there with a bridge that can swap currencies in an instant, where you can swap $1 billion for $1 billion in ETH for 50 cents, that's something that I would be looking at.
Yeah.
I'm looking at how young people can interact with that, because as the UI and the UX, the user experience and interface gets better, more and more young people will get exposed to banking even earlier than they ever have before with centralized banking because of the internet, memes, and branding. So that's my two spectrums. Ultra high net worth people, look at getting people behind you to say, here's the project you should invest in. And for millennials, well, you know, this is going to come to them anyway.
Yeah. Beautiful. I love it. I love the energy behind it. And I love all the stuff that's going on. And I learned a few things today. You know, it's funny to me that we want to stay in our lane, right? We oftentimes don't know what we don't know. We're at that stage of unconscious incompetence. We just have no idea that there's something out there. And then all of a sudden it becomes a big thing. And then we have to like catch up. And right now we're at the stage where you kind of can get to that level of conscious incompetence, where you know that you don't know something, but at least you can do something about it. And so listening to somebody like you, that's a subject matter expert on not just, you know, Bitcoin and the macro, but how it can actually benefit people, millennials, high net worth people, is really, I hope, something that opens, you know, just a few people's eyes around the world. I think that's great.
Wonderful. So do I.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your time and your wisdom today, Mark. I appreciate your being on. And I appreciate your being on, listeners and viewers. So I hope to see you again on another edition of the Wealth Architect Podcast. Remember what I always say, never give up your power in your health, your wealth, or your time. Have a great day, everybody. See you next time.
You've been listening to the Wealth Architect Podcast with Mark Yeagy. Follow us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Like and subscribe on YouTube. Share and tell your friends. See you soon.